All right, everybody, and welcome to the 9 Years podcast. Nick Draper here with the face of the BBC Sport website, Mr. Stuart Deakins. Episode 259, Friday, the 20th of August, 2021. And we have two games at Plough Lane to discuss. How good does that sound? The games with Bolton and Gillingham. We'll be looking around what happened in League One, what's going to happen in League One this weekend as we travel up to Sunderland. We're going to be talking about the stadium as well and the positives and the negatives of our first two games with full houses in inverted commas in Wimbledon in SW19, SW17, if you want to be picky. And then obviously we'll be looking back, as we do at the end of each week now, to 20 years ago this week and what happened in our final season of Wimbledon FC at Selhurst Park. But Stu, first of all, we will get into the stadium and the atmosphere and everything like that about finally returning home after 30 years. But should we just go straight into what happened on the pitch to begin with? When we hosted Bolton, 3-3 draw, and then Gillingham on Tuesday night, the 1-1 draw with Gillingham equalising with the last kick of the game. And much like last week's, Stu, I want to start with team changes. So from the Bolton game, we spoke about the 8 changes we made between Doncaster in the league and then Charlton in the cup. And there was a lot of talk last week. We were saying about, you know, perhaps making changes for the first round of the League Cup is not unusual. A lot of teams do it, rotating because you've got Saturday, Tuesday. It made a lot of sense. But I think we were all caught totally off guard by the team lineup on Tuesday night, which featured 7 changes. A change of formation. We went back to the back three with wing backs. We started off with 2 up top in Presley and Mboude. Afterwards, Robbo said that this was, he picked the personnel around the formation that he thought was the best way to go against Gillingham. And the formation he thought was going to cause him troubles. And he brought the players in on the basis of that. Do you think it was just that? Or do you think there was an element of keeping things fresh? Because we are, having beaten Charlton as well, Saturday, Tuesday.
Yeah, I think if you look at it, out of the 3 league games, there's only 4 players that have played 90 minutes. And that's right through the spine of the team. So you've got Nick Zanner, Will Nightingale, Alex Woodyard, and Asal. They're 4 that have played 3 games, played 90 minutes. So I think that's your spine, isn't it? So I think I know he's sort of said he doesn't want to be predictable. He wants to be able to, you know, when we look back on Glenn Hodges, and nothing, no slight on Glenn Hodges, it's time, but we sort of knew how we played 3-5-2. We knew how we set up, and in the second half of games, or you know, we were got found out because people knew how to play against us. I'm probably just as much as we were surprised at that team lineup. You can imagine Steve Evans and Paul Rayner were probably a little bit surprised by it. So I think it's good that we do that. You know, if we're keeping, how many times have we gone? And
Steve Evans was so surprised he stopped eating his pie for 30 seconds, and then he went, "No, I'm just going to carry on."
Yeah, oh, I don't know. Those two are just, they get worse. I know they're bad, but they just get worse. I think, you know, if he gets to this, I think last season, you and I could have probably named 7 or 8 on the team lineup quite comfortably. Mm. And the fact that we were surprised with a lot of other Wimbledon fans, it's good because it gets people guessing. I can see why I did it. I can see why I went with the 3 centre-halves, because ultimately it was a battle. And the 11 yellows, 7 from Gillingham and 4 from us shows you. It was cynical at points. Let's be fair, there was lots of off the ball. The bookings that were done, I reckon you could have easily had 3 or 4 more easily. But there was some cynical play from Gillingham. I personally felt the referee wasn't strong enough in the first half. And I think a lot of Gill players could have been on a yellow card. But hey, look, one went eventually, but a couple more could have gone.
Yeah, I want to talk about the different philosophies between Bolton and Gillingham. We will come on to that, and bookings as well, especially for us. But you mentioned there you thought perhaps the 3 centre-halves were because you felt like we'd be in for a bit of a battle. And perhaps as well, we were caught surprised. They've got Vidane Oliver and John Akindi. Akindi was injured. He didn't actually feature on Tuesday night, even though he had before. So perhaps we were thinking they're dangerous. They are dangerous. Maybe it gave us a bit of security. But in the end, as it was just Oliver up front for them. And at halftime, Robert changed it. And he said it wasn't working first half. The plan hadn't worked. So we changed it round. We went to a back 4. We put sort of Ayoub just kind of behind the front 2 and mixed it up that way. But it worked. It worked. Yeah. It worked in the sense that, because we didn't win the game. We have to remember that we didn't actually win the game. So you could argue it in the end it didn't. The biggest issue for me seemed to be that despite having all the possession and all the territory, and Gillingham allowed us that to a certain extent, the way they set up, probably looking to cancel us out and get a draw, we're not creating really enough. We had the one big chance after they had the red card, which was Chislett, who came on. Chislett with a shove was played in by Woodyard. Should have done better. That was the clear-cut chance, wasn't it? Other than that, when then we got the goal eventually. Is that our issue, or is that just a case of... Because at times I didn't think our final ball was good enough. I thought perhaps we went one pass too many, or if we tried to put a cross and it was over hit or under hit, one or the other. Set pieces weren't great either. Was that me being harsh, considering the way that Gillingham would set up clearly just to cancel us out, and especially trying to stop a Sal from really having a major influence like he had before?
No, I think you called it right. I said on our chat that I felt the pitch played a little slow on Tuesday. I felt it was a game that needed to zip around. There was a couple of times when we overloaded it on Ossie's side, and we just couldn't get that final ball. We worked it well a lot of times when Ossie, you know, was on his own. And I think, you know, he did get in behind a few times, but the final ball, and that's something Ossie needs to work on, because his pace will get him in behind. There's no doubt about that. But when he's in behind, he's got to then pick the pass. And I agree with you, actually. Yeah, we're not putting enough balls in. Maybe, you know, like last season when we were getting used to this sort of way of play, we did the extra pass on it. It was that extra pass, the extra pass. And I think sometimes we've got to be a little bit more direct. And it's really weird, actually, because it's just as much as I like George Marsh on, and he got some really good reviews, and I understand why. I felt we needed a bit, but I think we needed Anthony Hartigan in there just to play that. If you think, you know, going back to the Bolton game, Anthony Hartigan was looking to play the ball in between the lines, into feet, whereas it felt it went a lot more sideways on that side. So, yeah, for the possession we had, we didn't get enough. But I think, you know, in the first half, I think we did get in behind him. We just didn't utilise it. But I think the way Robbo looked at it, just as much as we surprised Gillingham by going the formation we did, we didn't expect Johnny Kindy to not play. So in the end, we did have a spare, you know, a spare centre half, and we didn't use that. We didn't need three in the end, which is why I went to two, and I felt it went better. But I know we've, you know, I probably were going to go on to it. I know we've got a substitution coach now, which is classic. What else is going to come in? Do you know what I mean? But I understand it. But the three subs we made, I just feel it reminded me back. We've mentioned this before in the days of Neil Hardy when we had 60 minutes and we changed like Tom Elliott and Don Bolion. Those three subs we brought on were quality subs.
Mm. Yeah, and the subs have actually, in both games, they've ended up getting us the goals. It was Presley and Mabule on Saturday, and then Palmer as a sub on Tuesday night. I absolutely agree with you on Hartigan. I think we were all surprised that he dropped out completely on Tuesday night. He was on the bench, but he didn't feature at all. But considering how strong a performance he'd had on the Saturday, really outstanding, I thought, man of the match performance on Saturday. The other one, perhaps you could argue, was Jack Radoni, who wasn't in the squad at all on Tuesday. Not sure why. Perhaps a little bit quiet on Saturday, perhaps. Yes. But also, again, when you've got Gillingham, who are... Hey, look, I mean, this is all beautifully in hindsight, isn't it? Because of the way Gillingham set up, maybe Radoni's a little bit more subtle in those advanced areas, maybe just between the lines can make something happen. Whereas a Sal is someone you really want running at defenders, isn't it? And taking them on and exciting in that sense. Whereas Radoni might just have that little bit of subtlety in and around the box. But hey,
yeah, do you know what? What was surprising? I actually hadn't clocked that he wasn't even involved in the squad, and that's a good sign, you know, because it means we've got a good strength squad. And also, he actually scored the winner, didn't he, in the last game at Plough Lane against Gillingham, top corner.
Yeah.
I think he can mix it about, but I don't know, he might have had a bit of a knock, or we've got three games coming up. You know, trip to Sunderland, trip to Northampton, and then the trip to Ipswich. It's a schedule, which is, I think, more of the case is why Robbo is switching around the players, keeping them fresh. Sports science now is a very big thing. I know Chris McDonald is very much a case of how many minutes they, you know, how many kilometres they run and stuff like that. I've got a sense our backroom staff really impresses me now. It really does. And I think just as much as a team is really important on the pitch, all the decisions being made off the pitch are going to do us well. And we're probably not seeing the benefit of that now. So it might have been a knock. But the subs, I thought, were really good. Obviously, McCormick. Oh, he's calling McLaughlin. Why is it? It's because of the MC, isn't it?
It's because you're such a big fan of Neighbours and 90s pop star actor Craig McLaughlin.
Definitely, definitely. But I just thought, you know, I had one of my brother-in-law with me, and he's a Spurs fan, loved Plough Lane. Like, he could not, he had a wander around, and he's just going, you've got an amazing stadium here. It's just perfect. But when the players come on, he was like, he bought on. And he was like, crikey, they're not bad. I think he was surprised at the depth we had. And I think, you know, look who didn't come on. You know, Jay Alexander didn't come on. Annie Hartigan didn't come on. Hennigan didn't come on. And no Radoni in that squad. So we've got a decent squad there.
There was somebody else who didn't feature on Tuesday night in the squad at all, who did on Saturday, which was Nesta Guinness-Walker. We might come back to that one shortly. You mentioned one player that has played every game so far. You mentioned the four names. One of those is Ayuba Sal. I'm wondering if Radoni is fit. I think we've been said that we've got a fully fit, fresh squad for Saturday at Sunderland. So you'd imagine Radoni is available for selection. It wouldn't surprise me if Radoni starts on Saturday and Sal doesn't, because I'm wondering if Sal has to pay a little bit of a price for his inexperience, shall we say, at the end of Tuesday night when he was caught offside and decided to keep dribbling and then kick the ball away and pick up a silly booking.
Yeah, I think I'll put it down to young exuberance. That's a big word for me. He's still 19, isn't he? And I always did say that, you know, the biggest challenge this season will be how our youngsters deal with a crowd, because we didn't have it last year. I think Sal come in and starts. I think he got one booking. I was looking at it, he got one booking last season in those games, and that was for a celebration at Accrington. So, you know, the irony is that's his only booking, whereas he's got two bookings now for dissent. You know, is it frustration? Hey, look, I don't mind that. I don't mind that. Not frustration, but I don't mind that determination and that sort of, like, you know, I want to prove everything. But they're silly bookings. It's, you know, it's two bookings in three games now. Yeah. Five bookings is a match ban. It's like, and they're silly bookings. Like, I can live with a defender. I can live with a Nightingale getting a five bookings, and I can live with Alex Woodyard doing that because that's their job. But we need him on the pitch. I think he will start. I think he's a match winner. You know, he shouldn't be tired. He's 19. He should be able to run around twice a week. Not run around, do you know what I mean? But I think he's our playmaker. I'd argue he's probably the first name on the sheet at the moment, which is a great compliment to him. But he's just got to curb it a little bit. And I noticed on social media, some people were moaning about it, but that's what it is. He's a 19-year-old. You know, we've got kids in our team who are learning their game. You know, we've said that before, you know, a lot of the big clubs send their players on loan to smaller clubs to get them used to men's football and get those things out of their system. We're not, you know, they're playing the games for us now. So we have to understand that. You know, I think he nearly took out a whole family for the Bolton game. Bless him, do you know what I mean, when he kicked it into the stand, and he quickly apologised. But you know, I think we have to tell you, but I think he will start. I think he'll start. I think he's out. I think he's pivotal to our game, and I think he'll start when he's available.
It was a silly booking, though, and we actually picked up a couple. Mabudi got booked, and Mabudi was showing signs of frustration as well on Tuesday night. And one awful, he was an awful. Tell you what, there were two players that made awful dives on Saturday. Mabudi made an awful dive right in front of us on the touchline, which was dumb because there was no need to go down there in the situation he was in. But the Gillingham, was it Tucker, their centre half?
Oh, yeah, I was in front of me. That was hilarious.
He literally threw himself Superman-esque through the... I was like, what? Because he just thought the referee in that position would expect there to be a push, and there was no one... I can't remember the player was up against, but there was a...
Was it Ollie Palmer?
I think it was Palmer, actually, yeah.
Had a flea in his ear, they sort of say, didn't they? Yeah, it was blatant.
It was so bad. And then, but for the goal as well, if you watch the goal back, he goes down. He goes down, they're protesting that they got a shove, and it's like, no, you've just thrown yourself to the floor again. So anyway, the other silly booking we picked up was Ollie Palmer, got a little bit carried away with the goal. That's the excitement of Plough Lane, I think, and scoring in front of the home end, first goal of the season for him, but jumps right into the crowd. You know what's going to happen there. So, oh well.
It's just so sad, though, isn't it? It's just like, I looked at the bookings and their goal scorer, well, actually wasn't their goal scorer, to be fair. He was... Mm-hmm. I think it's celebration. I think he's probably near the ball and trying to claim it. But, you know, Oliver got booked as well for a celebration. It just, oh, it just annoys me. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, all right, you can argue Oladipo should have lost himself in the south stand, and I think he wants to get in a fan zone early before everyone else did. But, you know, it's a game of passion. It just annoys me. I think the referee, and don't get me wrong, I don't even think the referees want to book him either, but they have no choice because they're all assessed.
Yeah, and the rules are the rules, I mean.
But let's be fair, right? He could have booked another five or six. They all got lost in that stand.
Yeah, he wasn't the only one. He led it, obviously, but a few were quite more than happy to jump in. I know.
So your argument could be, you know, FIFA could get to a stage where actually anybody goes into the stand and we'd have had five or six players on bookings. It's just, I don't know.
To be fair, there'll be some clubs, mentioning no names, Milton Keynes, that they'd love their players to go in the stands because at least they'd have people in there.
I know. It's just a shame, isn't it? You know, Ollie Palmer, you know, I thought he didn't have the greatest games on Saturday against Bolton. But he'd done the job when he came on and he scored a goal. That's what he's paid for. It's just a shame he's got a book in. But that's the game at the moment.
It was on Saturday a fantastic occasion. And we ended up getting a point out of it, having been 3-1 down. Just to come back, because I mentioned him, Nestor Guinness-Walker, not his greatest game, wasn't then in the squad on Tuesday. Not going to spend a great deal of time on it, but might need a bit of a confidence boost and maybe a little bit of time out just to get back. We see he might well be straight back in the team on Saturday. We're totally unsure as to what team selection is going to be happening now, but yeah, he probably just needs a little bit of a confidence boost because he would have had a knock to his confidence on Saturday.
Yeah, I felt for him. It was obvious he got targeted. Their number 11. Basically attached to Nestor Guinness-Walker on the touchline. And I think that's when Robbo's discussed before that, you know, sometimes players have got to make decisions on the pitch. And I didn't understand why we didn't switch. You know, yes, we don't want to play someone like Will Nightingale at a left back, but it was obvious that number 11 knew that, you know, diagonal ball from the keeper, flick on, and it just happened every time. And, you know, maybe that's just the inexperience of the team. Nestor Guinness-Walker should have been talking and going, look, I'm getting done on this one. He couldn't compete in the air. And it was a good tactic from Bolton. But it did seep away his confidence. Now that's a shame. You don't like to see that, but you could visibly see it. It'd be interesting what we do now, because I don't know how we're doing with the under-23s now, whether we're playing in-house friendlies at a training ground, because yeah, I think you're right, taking him away from the action, but he still needs a bit of, you know, are we doing under-23 games and stuff? I don't know how we're doing. You know, last season we did play a few friendlies, didn't we, behind closed doors at the training ground. So I think that's, you know,
last season it would have had to have been.
Well, everyone's behind closed doors, but yeah, take him out. But I think Robbo want to get him back in. You know, look, you don't become a bad player overnight. Nestor Guinness-Walker does what's the word? He splits opinion, doesn't he? On terms of that, I think he's a great athlete. And I think, you know, the athletical side of it, I think you can always work on people's technical side. So I understand why he's so highly rated. He's still young, though. You know, he's you've got him from Met Police. I think sometimes we expect miracles, don't we? And some players like Asal come in and hit the ground running, and you know, but not everyone else does.
One player that we've noted because of that Bolton game in particular, who's done all right, Nick Zanev, a couple of excellent saves, really, really great save at 3-1 on Saturday, which would have been 4-1 had he not pushed it over the bar, and that would have been game. There'd be no way back from that, despite the surge of atmosphere and emotion we had, even with the substitutes coming on. But you've noticed something about his starting position.
Yeah, do you know what? I look at Nick Zanev now and I think how great it is when you think about it. He was number two and wasn't going anywhere, but you know, you knew he was a New Zealand international at the 21 level. But I just, how he's grown is amazing. His confidence is great. The Bolton game, the starting position that he had when he gave away the penalty, well, that's why he gave away the penalty, because he was just caught in no man's land. I think we're going to have to accept that, but you know, against Gillingham, crikey, there were some times when he was playing as a centre-half. I think I like it, but I think we just need to be a bit switched on, because I think some teams are going to knock it over the top. I know we try and squeeze the space and stuff like that, and you know, there's a couple of times, I think there was one where he took the ball literally right in the corner of the penalty area. Excellent. So no criticism of him, but it's just the way we play is very much for him to be the, you know, the extra man to play it. But you know, there's a couple of times where his distribution, he was playing out to people who didn't want the ball, and there was a couple of times when we first half when we gave away cheaply, and you know, against good teams we may get punished.
Well, I thought Bolton were a good team on Saturday and long spells of that second half, we were at times it was a bit like men like boys at times. The substitutions gave us the impetus, but that for me, I was watching that second half, and for a long time in that second half, I was watching it go, and I was just slightly nervous and anxious because I thought, wow, this could happen this season, because we've got teams with very experienced players and very talented players. And I mentioned, well, you had the five at Bolton. I thought the attacking players, you had the ones we mentioned. We mentioned Sheehan. We mentioned Bakayoko. You mentioned him there, Bakayoko. Afalayan was the winger. And then Sarcevic, I thought, was excellent as well. And they got Dual up front. And they're good players. And they gave us a bit of a torrid time that second half. So we did really well with the substitutes to get the momentum back. And I thought Presley was actually the most important in that. I know we're going to talk about Mabude. We're going to talk about him, of course. We'll come on to that in a second. But the flick for Sal to go through to win us the penalty to get in was the most important moment of the game, I think. And if you actually watch that play develop, it was actually Presley being able to make the run in the first place and then win his header. And without that, I don't think we get back in the game. So I think that's probably gone a little bit under the radar. I think a lot of the praise went to Mabude because it was quite a spectacular equaliser. Whereas actually, I think across the whole performance, I would have put Presley as the most important.
I agree with you. It's like one of those. I think Presley come on and all of a sudden started winning headers. And what I noticed was that players started gambling again, because as players, you don't always get, you know, Ollie Palmer had a torrid time against them. You know, he just couldn't get any change out of Santos and stuff. And in the end, if you know your centre forward isn't really going to win the ball, then you don't gamble. You don't make those runs because they're wasted runs. But in the end, Asal was really confident, and before the ball had been flicked, he'd made the run. So as soon as the ball flicked, he's in, and then he gets the penalty, even though I don't reckon he died. We all knew that he's going to win penalties. He just will, because once he gets in that area, he just nicks it and he's gone. And I don't care if he dives or not. I just don't really care, to be honest with you. I was glad that Prezi picked up the ball and took the penalty, although I didn't notice it, and it might not have happened, but I think some people said that Asal looked really disappointed that he didn't get the ball.
I didn't notice. I just saw Presley grab it and stride up.
Yeah, and I love that in a forward. If you're a forward, take the blooming penalty. You know, that's my attitude. You're there to score goals. You know, and players sometimes have goal bonuses and stuff like that. So why would they not want to take a penalty? I just think when a forward doesn't take a penalty, it worries me. So I was glad he got the ball. Good penalty, pressure penalty. Let's be honest, that is his home debut, but he took the penalty really, really well. I like him. Yes, of course, you know, you can see rough around the edges. You know, I think there's going to be some games when he disappears, but I think as he gets his more, you know, game time and confidence, I think we'll see a very, very good player. I like him. I like him a lot. And and then we went on to the is it Mabude? I've got his name.
I call him Mabude, but I'm quite happy to call him the Watford player if you like.
Well, I'm amazed you haven't called him something else by now, John Mead. But I heard someone say the new Andy Clark, which was, I think, a compliment.
Yeah, I thought that, especially because at 3-3 he then went through and his touch was horrendous and he overran it. And that's when I thought, yes, he's got the pace and the touch of Andy Clark, who once did score an FA Cup third round replay victory over Watford, but we won't focus on that. I have been asked on a few occasions, did I celebrate the equaliser, given that it was a Watford player that scored it? And I can be honestly, I can remember three times in my life celebrating a goal scored by a Watford player. This was one of them. I don't think I've celebrated a goal by a Watford player quite as much as I did on Saturday. I did once see Neil Ardley score for Watford against the franchise of Wimbledon FC. So I celebrated that one. That was quite a nice moment. The other time, they beat Chelsea once. And I hate Chelsea. I think it was Alan Smart when they were in the Premier League. I just remember that one because Watford were rubbish and were getting relegated. And Alan Smart scored a goal. I think they won 1-0. So anytime Chelsea, I hate Watford. But as I said before, nothing matches my absolute hatred of Chelsea. But anyway, I did celebrate Maduia's goal.
Do you know what? It's interesting because you sort of like who you hate the most, isn't it? It's one of those, isn't it? It reminds me when I went to the Olympics, watched the boxing back in 2012, and I was lucky enough to see Anthony Joshua's, I think, first round win. Not that I knew who he was at that time, do you know what I mean? But I remember when the other ones, I think what we ended up doing was cheering for the country that we liked the most. And then it was France versus Germany, and we were like, oh no, we're in trouble now. Do you know what I mean? But it was like that. It was like, who do you hate the most? And then it was like some really tough decisions. So, but I'm glad you celebrated. To be honest with you, I think you'd have been wooden if you hadn't celebrated that goal. I smacked my hand against the blue and metal rod thing above me. I just forgot it was there, as you do.
Yeah.
But what I don't know about you, but I celebrated, but I also tried to take in what I could see around me. And the south stand was going, I'm fortunate enough where I sit. I'm literally right side on with the south, and it just was going, oh, it was just an amazing sight to see.
Yeah, I think the issue I had afterwards, because everyone was saying, what a noise when that third goal went in. And I was like, I find that difficult, because when you're in the middle of it, you're not aware of how loud it is, because you're contributing to it. It's like when the Hardy Boys returned at WrestleMania. You watch it back and you go, oh my word, how loud were we? But in the middle of it, yeah, everyone was just, you knew that everyone was going absolutely crazy in the stand. But yeah, you didn't appreciate just how loud the noise was. And that's what it was for me on Saturday. But yeah, what an occasion. And what a moment, really. Great moment.
Yeah. And I'm being honest with you, I'm disappointed we didn't go on and win the game, because we had, what, 15 minutes from when we got the equaliser? Which is being greedy. I know it's being greedy. But it was set up, wasn't it? It was set up for like a 4-3. I was sitting there thinking, like, the Aston Villa when we...
I had that same thought, yeah.
Did you? Yeah, like, yeah. Leonardson,
when I was sat there, I was remembering Leonardson, yeah. Funny enough, yeah, when I sat in the stand, yeah.
And Ron Axon at the time, Aston Villa manager, wasn't he? I remember walking down the touchline at Selhurst Park, looking like, what the hell just hit us?
Yeah.
But I'm being greedy on that, you know, a 3-0 draw, and Bolton's second 3-0 draw, like, in the city, like, ridiculous, like, Bolton fans getting value for money, definitely.
They threw me a little bit because they kept a clean sheet at Lincoln on Tuesday night. I was like, where's that coming from? Football is a funny old game.
If you were their manager, you would be going, look, we can't keep scoring 3 goals to get a point. Good to watch. I think they will be open. But then again, I think we were scoring goals. We just got a lot of goals in us.
Well, we talked at the start of the season about being worried about Joe Pickett leaving and who's going to get the goals. And in 4 games in all competitions, we've got 7 goals and 7 different goal scorers.
Yeah, so, and Joe's not scored yet for Ipswich.
No. Well, we'll come on to Ipswich in a little bit. Yeah, not be the best start for them this season. Anything else I wanted to add? I don't think there's anything else I wanted to add in terms of the football on the weekend. We'll talk about the stadium more, I think. Oh, no, the only other thing was we talked about the philosophies of Bolton and Gillingham. And obviously, Bolton, you've mentioned there, wants to score goals. Open, nice, attacking, attractive side to watch. I'd quite happily watch Bolton all season if we couldn't watch Wimbledon. I was impressed with them. Gillingham, completely the opposite, as we've touched on. I don't think I've ever seen as negative and as cynical a side as what Gillingham were on Tuesday. I was taken aback just how bad they were. But also, where we're sat, we're sort of just behind the dugout, the away dugout.
Yeah.
And as annoying as they are, because Rayner stands there the whole time. Rayner stands up on the whole time, and he's always having a word and a nudge with everything. And Evans will get up. When Evans gets annoyed, he'll get up and he'll always go to the fourth official. He won't come up for any other reason, really. But also, I thought, when I'm watching them, I'm thinking, these are two people that have been and managed so many games of football. They never look, as much as they were giving it anger and stuff like that, I don't think genuinely they were ever really stressed or anything like that. I think they've seen it all before, to be honest with you, and I think that probably showed in the way they set up their team. They weren't worried. Like, the Gillingham fans were very quiet, probably because they were so bored of watching their team just sit there defending for 90 minutes or 45 minutes at least. But I think the managerial pair, unfortunately, as much as I'd say it, their experience and everything, I think they sort of knew what they were doing, which is really hard to admit because they're a pain in the ass. And he must get so bored getting booked every single week.
I think he expects it. I think he's disappointed if he doesn't get a yellow card. Yeah. It's weird. Do you know what? It's been allowed to happen, and Robbo covered it in his Mate Manager, that it's just that's what's allowed to happen. And Robbo made a really interesting comment, like saying that if he went around doing that, he'd get booked straight away.
Yeah, true.
But it took Evans, what, until the last 10 minutes or something to get a booking? I know people that have spoke, you know, Steve Evans have not socialised with Steve Evans, but away, you know, he's kind of King's Meadow for games, and I know a few people that have been in his presence said he's a really nice guy, but he's just a football, he turns into he just turns into what he is. Because no one can be that angry for that long. Like, that's not normal. You can't be that angry. But it is a little bit of a sideshow, isn't it? Is it sometimes taking that heat away from his team, because he's the one that everyone moans about? You know, is it a tactical genius? I know he's not a tactical genius, but, you know, he's been doing it for long enough.
He gets results. He gets results.
He does. But with Gillingham, do you know what? We've seen some really cynical and aggressive Gillingham teams. But I think with the brand of football we play, a lot of pace, I don't think they had much choice but to take us out. And there were so many off the ball blocks. And yeah, they were cynical. Cynical more than what I've ever seen a Gillingham team do. But then I think we've got a different team now. Like, let's be fair, the amount of pace in that team, the only way they could stop him was by literally, you know, hook or by crook.
Be interested to see how they go the rest of the season, because actually they've got they have got talented players going forward. So maybe maybe you would say they adjusted it slightly for us. We shall see. Anyway, should we just wrap up League One actually and preview Sunderland before we get onto the stadium?
Yes.
Let's just get the football side of it out of the way. So you mentioned Ipswich there, Joe Pickett yet to score. They've lost, well, they've not won this season. Knocked out of the League Cup this week. 2-1 defeats away at Burton, who are 100%ers. And then Cheltenham, nearly promoted Cheltenham in the week. Incredible miss. I can't remember which player hilarious. It was
McCauley Bond, wasn't it? The one who won my QPR.
He took it past, looked, chipped it over the keeper, ran onto it, just had to tap it into an empty net, but tried to do something bizarre with it and ended up missing and awful. But Ipswich just shows you. The thing is, Sheffield United, when they finally got promoted out of this league, do you remember they started really poorly? I think they lost 3-0 at home to Southend in very early on as well. I don't think they won their first three or four. They ended up in the league at a canter. So it's early days. They've got so many blooming players there. It's ridiculous. But not a great start. Portsmouth and Burton, as I mentioned, they're the 100%ers so far. Yeah. Portsmouth not conceded a goal yet. Ryan Tunnicliffe is a good player.
Good managers as well.
Yeah.
You know, let's look at Jimmy Floyd, Hasselbank. The form, you know, Burton come to us, didn't they? Played really well, got loads of loans in. I just think, you know, Jimmy Floyd, Hasselbank knows his league. And of course, the Cowley brothers at Pompey. And in a way, it's strange for Pompey because they're not the fancy team, are they? In terms of when you look at the big clubs, and Pompey fans will hate it because they class themselves a big club. But in this league, they're not really. There's some massive clubs in here. And maybe going under the radar may help them. But Cowley's going on about his business. And you're not even, you know, I didn't even notice Pompey were where they were. And that's the thing, isn't it? You know, you're looking at other results at the moment, aren't you, with the Ipswiches, and the Charlton's not doing very well. So, yeah, they're going under the radar. But Burton, don't surprise me. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one.
Shrewsbury, Doncaster, Fleetwood, no points so far. Shrewsbury, no goals. So Fleetwood, we thought before the season, we said, you said Shrewsbury, Doncaster, I think they'll be fine. Just trying to, yeah, they're basically having a pre-season now and they'll work it out. I'm sure they will. So that's where we are at the moment. This Saturday, we head up to the Stadium of Light, where we are hosted by Sunderland, who are currently in the first, because I clarify, for me, after three games is when you publish a first league table. Match of the day, I'm not watching the Premier League anymore because I can't be arsed with it. But I flicked on the TV on Sunday morning and it was the end of it. And they put the blooming league table up. I'm thinking, you've got four teams that haven't even played a game yet. Why are you after one fixture? It's like, and they make a joke out of it saying, I was like, don't make a joke of it. Just don't do it. There's no reason to do it. Like, anyway, there's a League One table after three games, which is fine. And Sunderland currently are placed eighth. They lost to Burton, as we've been talking about. They lost there in midweek at the Pirelli Stadium. Burton only had one shot on target, and that was the goal. So they won 1-0. It's the way it goes. Sunderland battered them otherwise. Last season, they were losing playoff semi-finalists. So they lost to Lincoln in the semi-final. They'd finished fourth. They've got Lee Johnson in now. And talk about left-backs, as we were earlier. Lyndon Gooch is definitely Sunderland's one to watch. And perhaps we need to be mindful of his threat down their right-hand side and down our left-hand side. So that's maybe a thinker for team selection. I wanted to highlight two signings they've made, because they've made a few signings, about eight signings, but only two of them have featured so far. And they are two youngsters. So they've got Dennis Serkin, who's a 19-year-old, who's left Spurs, released by Spurs, and has joined Sunderland. He's 19. He's been playing at left-back. Callum Doyle is on loan from Manchester City. He's 17. And he's started the game so far. So that's an interesting one for me to perhaps. Young 17-year-old centre-back, not probably going to enjoy being roughed up by a Presley or a Palmer. Be interesting.
Yeah, I think so. Sunderland, obviously, their fourth season in the League One, I believe. Yeah. So for all those Sheffield Wednesday fans, I saw something on one of the Facebook League Ones, Sheffield Wednesday fans saying, you know, probably won't be a bad thing being down here for one season to enjoy it. And I'm like, heard many teams say that before.
It's been funny, Sheffield Wednesday, but you've been in, they've been in this level before in this century, and they were down here for a little while. So what are they talking about anyway?
It's that big time thing, isn't it, John? I mean, and I sort of understand it. Sunderland, yeah, obviously got beat 3-0 at home, didn't we, and demolished at home last season. And then a 1-1 draw up there when it was the COVID, just remember, the COVID situation. So different ball game, though, when you're going up there with, you know, Sunderland fans behind them. So I think it'll be a big test for us in terms of this young team, of how they react. You know, they could strive, and I've got a feeling they're gonna enjoy that. Up there, I think it's a tough to get a result, but Sunderland had their own pressure, and I think Johnson at the moment, he's probably got this season to get him up or he's out, because Sunderland won't hang around with new managers, so it's a pressure job. So I think Sunderland will always have more possession, but I think it's set up to get. I'm sort of thinking a draw up there, at least.
Was that our first Johnson out from you this year?
No, I think it's just being realistic, isn't it? You know, the manager up there, Sunderland fans won't take, they will not take a fifth season in League One.
No.
They won't. And I don't buy this thing about, you know, if you have more fans, you should be in a higher league. I think that's rubbish, if I'm being honest with you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, their fans are expectant and they live in the shadow of the Geordies up there, don't they? So they don't want that too long.
No. Is that a prediction then for you? Because I have to say that on Tuesday night, on the Ask a Prediction League, I predicted a 1-1 draw. So smashing a 4 points for me, thank you very much. Paul Cowan-Bye, I should owe you a tenner or something for getting me 4 points there. You forgot to predict, Stu, I noticed. But because I've got above you on the table now, so sucks to be you.
It's a marathon, isn't it?
Not a Snickers, yes. What was your prediction for Saturday?
1-1.
1-1, okay. I actually think we might do it. I think we might turn them over.
Wow, that's very, that, you know, for you, that's a big prediction.
Saying that, yeah, well, we'll see. I'll see when I wake up in the morning, that's when I get a feeling. I get a feeling about what's going to happen. So for now, I'll say a 2-1 win for us, but we shall see. We are going to lose at some point, unfortunately.
Of course we will. And I think the team like to be, because I think, you know, Northampton, it's a rubbish draw. I don't know if it's a rubbish draw. I just don't want to,
yes,
you know, but I think it's a winnable game. It's a winnable game,
yeah, of course,
and
it's
then into the third round. So how does he, you know, it'd be interesting to see what he sets his team up, because I think, look, in the league, we've done well. We've got 5 points already, which is great, because that's 5 points against the 50 points we need. But a cup run, more money, you know, home draw, it's a good chance to get money in. And, you know, beggars can't be choosers. We need money.
There are 5 stadiums that I have no interest in going back to whatsoever. Northampton is one of those. I'm never going back there unless it's some huge game.
I like Northampton.
Bored of it. Bored of it. Bored of it. I'm bored of that one.
Do you remember Lyle scored that excellent goal up there? He was on the touchline.
Well, yeah, but that was then. Like, it doesn't mean I want to go back to... Do you know what I mean? Like,
I've got memories there. I took my wife there for Valentine's Day.
Oh, dear.
I took her into TFI Fridays overlooking the ground. I thought it was great. I wasn't the only person who thought that either. There was other people in there with their wife, with their girlfriends, etc.
Yeah, we lost that night, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's Northampton. I have no desire to go back there. Oxford? No. Gillingham? No.
Oh, crikey. No.
Portsmouth? Done that enough times now. And Southend? Not that we're probably ever going to.
I was just going to say, you're not going to play with a little...
No, I know, but I've got no interest in going back to those stadiums. So there you go. Stamford Bridge is the other one. You would have to, yeah. I mean, anyway, elsewhere in League One, big game this weekend. Early kickoff, 1 o'clock kickoff. That'll be for police reasons, not TV reasons. Rotherham versus Sheffield Wednesday. Do you remember Goal? Do you remember that film, Goal? The trilogy, and the guy in it was the American. He'd always say, "Full ham, full ham." I was like, no, it's Fulham. Can you at least get your script right? Get your Hollywood script writers off their asses and learn something. But so Rotherham versus Sheffield Wednesday. Yes, Sheffield Wednesday yet to concede, but that's a big game, I think.
Yeah, do you know what it is? There's a couple of others that I'm interested in. Gillingham against Morecambe, just because Morecambe have done all right since they started, haven't they? Fleetwood, Cheltenham. Fleetwood are not doing well, which I tended to think they wouldn't.
No.
So, yeah, I'm not saying bottom of the table crash, because Cheltenham had a good result against Ipswich. Probably the right time to play them.
Cheltenham.
Cheltenham, and hopefully it's the right time to play Ipswich for us as well before they start hitting form. But yeah, Fleetwood, I'm expecting them to get, I don't think they're going to be in this division next season.
We will be. Well, we might be in the Championship, who knows, but we won't be going down. We'll certainly be at Plough Lane next season. Stu, what have your overall feelings been on the new stadium? I'm just going to say in one sentence, it feels like home already.
Yeah, it does. And the fans make it home, don't they? Do you know what I mean? I think we've all embraced it. Yeah. I've got some decent seats. I've got my own little balcony, as I said, as I joke. But I'm on the sort of southwest corner. I think we've had we had 16 months of no football. So actually going back to just a ground is great, but going back to Plough Lane, I think we made a ground. I think we were smart. We didn't make a ground too big for us. We've been to many grounds when it's half full and it echoes where this ground is full all the time. Yes, we could have problems with the fact of it might be too small for us, which would be a bit stupid, but it could be. But it just feels right. The sound is, it keeps the sound in so well. Saturday was just amazing. Tuesday night under the lights, I think that's what we were all waiting for, weren't we? And it didn't disappoint. Let's be fair, nearly 9,000. Well, we don't know how many were there, but I reckon about 9,000. Midweek, we never got that for any game at King's Meadow. It was just immense, 9,000 people.
There's a reason we didn't get 9,000 midweek at King's Meadow.
Oh, yeah, of course. But what I mean, I know. But what I'm saying, it was bigger. It was bigger. A midweek game against Gillingham. No disrespect. I'm not going to say no disrespect to Gillingham. They're rubbish. But, they weren't a star attraction, were they? But we had 9,000 there. It was bigger than any game we had at at King's Meadow for me. It just felt right. Loved it. I think I still sometimes sit there and think, has this really happened? We've been lucky enough to score 4 goals there in the 2 games. And the celebrations have been mad for all of them. Loving it. And I can't wait for the next home game. I was so disappointed that we have 3 away games on the spin. Like, what's going on?
Well, it might help in terms of just getting a few other bits and pieces around the stadium ready. But no, absolutely agree with everything you say there. Having away fans behind the goal, I know some people are unhappy with this because they're on TV and away fans do like to be behind the goal, but from the West Stand, it makes such a difference to the atmosphere. And to see the Bolton fans really did contribute a lot to Saturday, in fairness to them. So I think that's good. And there's going to be a little bit of banter with the corner of the East Stand with the away fans, which I enjoy. Yeah. It's always good to have a little bit of friendly banter in the corner. I'm not sure how much friendliness will be involved when Milton Keynes arrive.
Well, that's going to be a headache, isn't it? Yeah.
And that'll be an interesting one for the police, especially getting fans in and out of the stadium, especially around that area by the away end, by the corner pin. That's going to be fun. But again, that's a problem for future. That's a problem for future AFC Wimbledon to worry about, to the present AFC Wimbledon. One thing I would ask that we change, especially for midweek games. Well, no, I think it's mainly just for midweek games because it wasn't a problem on Saturday. And a lot of people have mentioned this, is the advertising, the digital advertising in front of the East Stand, which is opposite the West Stand, was making it so difficult to follow what was happening on the pitch. When the ball was over that side, it was a combination, I think, of the floodlights aren't really that bright, but the advertising hoardings were very bright, too bright. And it was a pain in the ass to actually watch the game. So I'm wondering if we can have a think about how to alleviate that problem in future, because a lot of people were complaining about this.
Yeah, and you know what? I remember last season they were talking about the floodlights. I think they are. They're brighter than what they were at King's Meadow, which doesn't take much. But it does feel along the touchline and the corners, it just isn't. I don't know why that is, whether it's something I can look at. But you're right, yeah, the advertising, the red, what was the red one? That was just like, I couldn't even fight.
Yeah, red.
You couldn't. You kept losing it. You kept losing the ball when it was on the floor, isn't it? It was that side of it. I don't think it, I hope it didn't affect the players, but it did. Yeah, when it was over that far corner, it was just like, oh my days, like it's very bright. The same thing I don't get about the ground is I know that they're not cheap, those digital advertising, but it feels like it makes the rest look really average in terms of what we got behind the goals, in terms of advertising. I'm not saying we should have digital all around because I know they're expensive, but if we can fill those digital advertising, then why not? but it just looks a little bit. I think that's the reason why Ollie Palmer could get into the south stand so easily. Just walked in on that side. I think, yeah, I think now, and anything I'll say, obviously, people commented, obviously, the south stand fan zone, really, really good. Really enjoyed it Saturday. Loads of choice. Wasn't as much choice for the Tuesday night game, when you could probably argue that that probably would be more popular because people were returning from work. But they're nothing major. They're just teething problems that, you know, the club have got to work out. But I have heard that the alcohol is very good for the Wimbledon Brewery in the South Stand from people that drink. I don't drink anymore. But I have heard that the alcohol is really good over there.
Yeah, it sounds like the food was really, really good. I just think there was, it's all, as we say, a lot of these things are teething issues that get sorted out once. You only know what things look like and how things work once fans are in. So these things will all be sorted out, I have no doubt. Scanners were causing an issue, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Jay, what's wrong with a human being? That's all I'm saying. I know we had this conversation last week. Just a human being takes the ticket, rips it, lets you through. Never had any issues.
So, yeah, but then we get into this discussion about digital. I want stuff on my phone. I don't really want another ticket I can lose, because I've had problems with tickets before in the past when I've gone to the wrong ground. Or taking the wrong ticket.
Taking the wrong tickets to Aldershot, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've got previous. Yeah, my ticket didn't scan. You know, we had it at King's Meadow, didn't we? We had a system at King's Meadow that worked okay. Like, it went down a few times, didn't it? But on the whole, it worked okay. This system hasn't, you know, I think on the Saturday game, my wife's didn't work, but mine did. And then the Tuesday game, hers didn't work and mine did. Sorry, mine didn't work. And they just let us through the side bit of it. Now, I don't know if it's a test event. We didn't know whether we passed the first one or not, but we are going to need to start obviously providing attendance figures and matching up, you know, especially those who've turned up. So hopefully it is something they can resolve, but it's quite important. And we have had challenges with the ticket, and there's no doubt about that. You know, the ticket inside has. So maybe in a way the club are probably grateful for a week. When's the next game? Saturday week?
2 weeks.
Home to 2 weeks. So
2 weeks.
You know what? It's probably a good job we didn't get drawn at home in a cup.
Yeah.
You know, maybe those hot balls were ours and made sure we didn't get a home game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they've got 2 weeks to work on it, but it does need to be worked on. Mm.
But they will be, I'm sure. They will be all sorted. The stadium does look amazing. One of the things people haven't mentioned, and because it seems so obvious to say it, but we talk about wanting to be and feeling like it's our home ground. It's the fact the seats are blue and yellow, Stu. Like, I know we had the main stand in the end, it was sort of painted blue with Chelsea came in, they made the seats blue and everything like that. But blue and yellow, that's us. And that makes it does. It's sort of a subconscious thing when you're in there and you actually feel like. And then when I'm leaving the stadium and coming to the stadium and people are all dressed up and it's blue and yellow everywhere. And it feels like, and this is going to sound horrible, but at King's Meadow at times, it felt like we were a bit of a novelty act in some senses. Like King's Meadow was never a Football League ground and all the sort of little idiosyncrasies of it. But then when you get to Plough Lane and you've got masses of hordes of people sort of coming out the stadium at the end in all directions, getting on trains and buses and moving in, it feels like proper football, doesn't it? Whereas perhaps King's Meadow didn't quite have that feeling, with all due respect to maybe it's particular to me, because King's Meadow was a quick trip around the corner to get there. It didn't have that big sort of sense of occasion to it, whereas travelling to a big proper stadium, like proper away fans, it has more of that feel to it. So, but yeah
happy, and
I'm happy as Larry, whoever Larry was.
You know, there's so much more to come as well, because, you know, we're in a posh council estate, aren't we, in Wimbledon, which, and I don't think all those flats have been and sold yet or being moved into, but I still think the club should make sure that they give them all flags so they can hang their flags from the balcony and make it a real, you know, a bit like Leighton Orient. Or you remember going back to when we say Grays? Do you remember when Grays had their?
How can I forget Grays? How can anyone who was at Grays that day forget the flats overlooking the stand?
We need to make that an attraction. Like, just give them flags. Hopefully, it'd be in the ground because there's a lot of interest, especially from locals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I it's interesting because we parked in Waterside Way. Lots of parking down there if you get there early. And we went into Lidl's because who wouldn't? It's just cheap food. Like, why would I pay for a gourmet when I can give my son cheap stuff? Anyway, no, it's the difference. Practical sense. But I had two or three people come to me and go, oh, who are you playing today? Bolton. Oh, you've got a game today. And it was like, they were obviously going there stupidly, shopping on a match day. But there was interest. Anything I would say, and I've said this before actually, is you wouldn't know there's a ground there during the week. you wouldn't know there's a ground there. You could blink and you miss it. I just think we should have something. I like the digital, but I think we should have, I still think we should have something digital on the roadside that says our next three games or something, because there's nothing there, is there?
No.
You know, that's the only criticism I would have. There might be reasons why we can't do that, but I just feel we're hidden, which is ridiculous when you think it's a 10,000, yeah, 10,000 seater stadium with a massive West Ham, but it's hidden. So I just think it'd be nice if we just had something saying, digital. I think digital would be the best way, or if they got something and just the old fashioned, remember the old fashioned sort of like next three fixtures and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I don't want us to get caught on our laurels. You know, we're doing well with setting, you know, but let's not get caught on our laurels thinking this is just, you know, everyone's going to turn up for every game. We want to attract new fans. And there's so much more out there at the moment. So, but yeah, magical 2 days. And I cannot wait for Oxford.
Maybe we should get George to get a sandwich board and he could just walk up and down Hayden's Road, Garrett Lane, and just ringing a bell. Next three games, here you go. Make sure we spell Milton Keynes correctly with an F, an R, and A. You know what I'm going with there.
Yeah.
Happy days. But no, all good. 2 weeks until we're back for the visit of Oxford and their manager. So, yeah, very much looking forward to it all. Happy, happy days. Less happy days, Stu, were 20 years ago this week. Quite an important week in the history of Wimbledon Football Club. So this is the week commencing August the 20th through to the 26th in 2001. Let's do the other bits and pieces first, Stu. The number one single that week was a song I'd forgotten about, which was Let's Dance by Five, which was not a David Bowie cover. It was their own song. And I listened to it and it's awful. So that's all we're going to say about that one.
And it got to number one.
It got to number one, which wow. Questionable tastes for the pop charts back in 2001 there. But yeah, the number one film was Planet of the Apes remake by Tim Burton, starring Helena Bonham Carter. Did you ever fancy Helena Bonham Carter?
I'm probably going to have to Google it because I don't recognise her name.
What?
I'm trying to think. I was in my teens at this. I wasn't in my teens.
No, you weren't in your teens.
I'm lying. I'm lying there, actually. I'm literally going to Google it just to see.
See, I fancied Helena Bonham Carter because of her in Fight Club, but that's because she was a little bit mental. It was a bit like Drusilla in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, who wasn't really attractive, but she was mental, and that actually made her more attractive. And that was sort of Helena Bonham Carter in Fight Club.
To be fair, I think Googling it back in 2001 would have been better, not doing it now that she's older.
So ageist. Unbelievable. She's younger than you. She's 55.
Yeah, but she hasn't aged well.
Ouch. Wow.
Well, we're never going to meet. We're never going to meet, are we? So no, I don't remember.
Okay. She's not related to, was it Jack Bonham, the Brentford goalkeeper? Anyway, big news this week in the wider world on a musical theme. On the 21st of August, Nickelback released How You Remind Me. Do you remember that song? That blighted many people's lives for a good long while. And on the 25th of August, Aaliyah died in a plane crash in the Bahamas at the age of 22.
Yeah, shocking.
I couldn't believe it was 2001. When I saw that, I was like, really? Was it really? But yeah, it was the 25th in the Bahamas, an overladen plane that came down in the Bahamas, killed 8 people, including Aaliyah. So there you go. But on the 25th of August, Stu, as well as what happened to Aaliyah, it was our home game with Norwich in the Nationwide League Division 1. We lost 1-0. Mark Lieber scored a late winner for Norwich, but that was the day of the walk for Wimbledon from Plough Lane to Selhurst Park. And it was also the launch of the Yellow and Blue unofficial programme, as there was a boycott on programmes that season for the official programme, which, to be fair, the official programme took a nosedive that season. It'd actually been a strong programme for a good number of years, but then that season was awful. And Yellow and Blue came in, and Yellow and Blue just smashed it out of the park, really. Really well done.
It was. It was like a fanzine, but a professional fanzine. Yeah. It was really good. Much like this podcast. Well, I wouldn't say professional. But yeah, Yellow and Blue was great in terms of money it raised and stuff like that. And a lot of work went into it. But yeah, I remember, yeah, you're right. The program did go downhill, but Yellow and Blue was the right thing. Right vehicle. I think it was the right vehicle as well at the time.
Yeah, Yeah, I think everyone involved in that project did a fantastic job, and I've still got copies of it, which I've kept hold of. And it was a really, really good read and really well put together. It was an important part as well, because if we think we had the internet back then, but it's nothing like it is today. So a lot of people were connected online, but not to the extent as you'd expect or perhaps take for granted these days. So actually still having that match day magazine to be kept abreast of what everything was going on and through the season with everything else that would later come was very important. So it served a real good purpose. But we lost. It was three defeats in a row after that one. We'd lost in the League Cup in the week on 21st of August, on the same day that Nickelback released How You Remind Me. We lost in the League Cup to Brighton. We lost 2-1 at the Withdean Stadium. Remember that? It was my only visit to the Withdean Stadium.
Yeah, I remember. John, I remember it really well, because the Withdean was in a place that really wasn't, shouldn't have a football stadium. I remember I got a coach. I'm getting a coach down to it. And yeah, really weird, because I remember going into like a really big bar on the side.
Yes.
Which was a nice bar, but really, it was weird, do you know what I mean? And then I remember I was sitting on the first row of the Athletics.
You're going to do the same thing I did when we scored. What you did against Bolton is what I did against Brighton, which is we scored and I had this railing in front of me and I leapt up and I've cracked my elbow against it. Like, killed me.
I remember Zamora scoring and
he scored twice.
Yeah, there was a lot of attention around him. But I remember the far side had like a hill sort of terrace Hey, look, Withdean's a very nice area in Brighton and it just didn't suit a football club. But, you know, look at Brighton now. You know, it suited Brighton, didn't it? You know, in terms of where they moved and obviously moved into the new stadium. So, yeah, I remember it. I remember it very well. It was a unique ground to go to, and obviously it was a bit of a warm-up really for some of the weird grounds that we would go to later on in the next couple of years.
Yeah, including Worthing, the temporary home of Withdean 2000. The irony being, of course, I never attended a game against Withdean or at Brighton with anyone called Dean, so really it should have been called Without Dean. And on that note, that is it for this week. Thank you very much for joining us. Updates from Sunderland will be on the podcast Twitter at 9YRS Podcast. Huge thank you to everyone that's come up to Stu and I over the past week, away at Doncaster and then at home, Bolton and Gillingham, to pass on your nice comments about the podcast. It's always very surreal and always very odd for us when you do, but please don't let that discourage you from doing it. Thank you very much. It means a lot and we're glad that you still are listening and that you're still enjoying the podcast.
Yeah, I actually chatted to another Stuart at the Gillingham game on Tuesday night, and just saying, and you know, it was some really nice. A lot of people said that, you know, it kept them going during the lockdown.
Yes, kept them sane.
But to be honest with you, it did the same for us. Just talking rubbish.
I've lost it completely, Stu. I mean, I present quite happily on here, but no, I've completely left it down.
But yeah, I think sometimes you forget. You know, we did it. We did this podcast when we started. Just because Nick and I would have this chat anyway for an hour, whether we recorded it or not, we'd talk rubbish for an hour. The fact that anyone listens to it is just remarkable, if I'm being honest with you. But yeah, it was quite humbling. You know, I had a lot of people nodding their head towards me and saying, thanks, Stu. Really weird when you don't know somebody and they call you by your name, but it's actually really flattering as well. It keeps us going because obviously, you know, sometimes there's many weeks where we're like, oh, crikey, this is hard work. But yeah, it was interesting actually. A lot of people, I even had Cormac's dad who sat next to me was going, I love your podcast. And it's just nothing, you know, it was just really weird the age range that listened to it on that. Even some of my mates that I chatted to said they listened to me. And I'm like, really? And they said, yeah, you just talk shit to him. And I'm like,
the fact that we moved it to Fridays and Cormac said this was an absolute winner because it helped him get to sleep.
Yeah, do you know what? I don't know if I was ever flattered by that. Cormac never listened to a whole episode because he never said, to be fair, Tommy used to be the same, didn't he? Tommy used to say to Stu, it was great. Or they call it a deaconism, or whatever it's called.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, well, you invented one today, which I've got to pick you up on, which was athletical. Left against Walker is a great, he's very athletical.
He's an athlete. But yeah, no, thank you very much. It really does mean a lot when you know, we get that response and stuff like that, so thank you very much. And hey, spread it, you know, spread the word, because we've got new fans joining, so spread the word, you know, we've got new fans and new audiences to for them to listen to our madness. I don't know how they're going to take that.
Let us know. Email us 9YRS at may14.co.uk. But anyway, thank you very much for joining me this week, Stu.
No problem at all.
Alexa Blissbag first, Milk Glass, 2 plus 2 equals 4. Thank you for joining us. We will speak to you again next Friday.